It's Monday, December 23rd, 2013, and you're listening to episode 325 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 48 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Johan.
This is John.
This is Beth.
If you guys hear a little bit of background noise during this episode, I don't know if the mics will pick this up or not. We've never done this before, but there's a total of like 13 people over right now. We have pretty much everyone that is associated with Fear the Boot at like the hosting level and spouses and guest hosts.
Now that I'm thinking about it, like everyone with a gold name except Chris Hussey
is,
because he's in Iowa, is currently in this house.
Wouldn't it be awesome if the doorbell rang and it was Chris
most
Hussey?
Most significant others are as well.
Yeah, so if there's a little bit of background noise, I apologize for it, but whatever. All right, two quick announcements, and then we're going to dig right into our topic. First off, I wanted to plug a charity that is out there right now. If you're not familiar with it, it's a charity called the Underground Railroad. And what this is...
I thought they kind of already won.
Wrong Underground Railroad.
They're borrowing that name. No, Grandma Moses is not working on this one.
Harriet Tubman's not suing boring. Today.
Yeah. What's going on is, as probably most of you are aware, there is a world sex trade in children, you know, and a whole lot of people who, even if they aren't children, don't want to be in the sex trade. And there are people that are working everything from law enforcement to investigations to, from what I understand, even like drive up in a van, grab somebody and go type operations to rescue these people. And so there's a charity set up for that. I won't claim to understand all the details, but I did a little bit of checking. It's a legit group. It's a good group. And I was asked by one of our listeners to plug it. And so I would like to toss out there a plug for this charity. I'll put a link in the show notes. If you have any extra Christmas money this year that you can throw their way, please do, because these are people that are literally freeing sex slaves. If we go off of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, these are people that are hitting the foundational need of that pyramid.
Absolutely. I mean, and to go after like the lowest of the low, people that abuse children. Oh my God, where do I sign my check?
Yeah. The next one is not directly a charity itself, but it's related to a charity. As you guys know, every year at Fear the Con, we have an official charity, which Derek Knudsen comes in and guilts everyone over and gets a ton of money, which is a good thing. I don't know what he's got in mind for us this year.
Nothing can top Puppies That Save America.
Yeah, I don't know how you're going to beat.
I assume it's going to be kittens that broke all their legs saving babies from burning houses.
That would be about it.
Four puppies for America.
Yeah.
With Jesus.
For Jesus.
I don't know how he will, though. But he does have a poll up in our forums where he's asking people about the kinds of prizes they would like to see in the charity raffle. So I'll link that as well in the show notes. Obviously, we want to have you guys get out there and sign up for Fear the Con so we can see you there. But also take a look at this poll and let Derek know what kind of prizes you would like to see for this charity raffle.
And if I'm not mistaken, Dan, the true early bird rates for Fear the Con tickets are about to end. They end on January 1st, I think.
I believe that is the case. To be completely honest, this year, I am really not all that involved in planning the
con. I believe
they
actually end on the 31st. I believe
on December 31st
is the new rate.
So, this will certainly be the last episode that drops before the new Fear the Con rate. So if you're sure that you're going to go and you haven't bought yet,
go.
Buy up.
And for people that have been sending me questions, I realize I'm a little behind on my emails for reasons we're going to get to here in a second. I will do my best to answer your Fear the Con questions, but I do want to emphasize that for the first year of Fear the Con, I am pretty much not involved in the planning of the convention. It is mostly Wayne, Pat, and Julia. Not exclusively so, but that's the three that seem to be kind of heading it up.
Dan is the pretty figurehead.
And this year, that's well, and I may also be heading up the tourism stuff again. But the point being that if you've sent me a question and I've not had an answer, or I do write you back eventually and don't have an answer, I just want you to understand why. All right. So, John, you posed a question or a thesis, I don't know, whatever you want to call it. I want you to explain it because I kind of rattled it back at you.
I posed an observation.
Right. Okay.
As everyone who watches our website knows very well by now, Dan is currently, you are currently running the second of your XCOM ARGs. You've sort of done a little spit and elbow grease engineering to the plot line of the expansion pack and made it a second war as opposed to a midquel. But as you've done with the first one, You've named all of your XCOM fighters after people you know, which, you know, everyone should do. If you don't do that, you're a heartless communist. and then gone a step beyond that and publicized the results of the combats and the plot developments and the research and stuff on Fear the Boot, opening the floor for in-character solicited roleplay. Some of us have done more of it than others. This time, I'm just doing a very little bit. The first time, I was a little more involved. Beth, you're heavily involved. I know Chris Hussey's posting a lot. Chris Mace is in on it now. A lot of people involved in our show.
Jeremy, Alex.
Are getting in on it. Yeah, and not just hosting. Tex, and, yeah. And, you know.
Yeah, it's not just hosts. It's just many lists of Dan Krensky. Yeah,
pretty much anyone Dan knows is invited to this thing. And lots of people are participating. I posited that you appear to be having more fun and more success running this ARG than you have in our friendship's history of tabletop games. I've known you for 10 years. I have never seen a game go as well, or you have as much fun doing it as I have you do these XCOM or ARGs.
All right, let me give a very brief history of these XCOM things for anyone who's not in the know, and then I'm going to go straight to answering your point, because I really got to thinking about why that's true, and the answer I came up with actually reverses the question. All right, so let me start with a little bit of history. For anyone who doesn't know, XCOM, the original game, was released sometime in the early to mid-90s. I don't remember an exact year. When I was really playing it most heavily was about 94, 95, and I will not claim to be the person who invented this. I'm sure I wasn't, but there was a character editor floating around, mostly because in the original XCOM games, despite the fact that you were supposed to be the best of the best, you know, Rainbow Six against the aliens, yeah, your characters couldn't hit anything.
Oh, God, Terror from the Deep.
Any of them. I mean, they were all like...
Oh, it was worse than TFTD, I mean, but it was bad in all of them.
I mean, the aliens would be no more than, let's say, 3-4 meters from you, and your XCOM guy would literally shoot the ground, shoot the sky, shoot the guy to the right, his ally to the right.
Was quite a robust system.
And could not hit the alien who's right in front of him, who any idiot with a gun could hit.
And bigger than a barn.
And so
you sold all your rifles and bought more grenades with them and beat the whole level that way.
Yeah.
Problem was, if you had a powerful enough grenade, you'd vaporize anything you could recover from the aliens, which was pretty much the only way you got money or gear.
So what people were doing is they were using these editors primarily to beef up their character. Well, I went in there, and at least among my friends, I was the first person to start naming them after people that I knew and working with their stats based on endurance, speed, accuracy, because these were all stats that existed within the original XCOM games. They were statistically a little bit more complicated than the current one.
Oh, far more.
And so I would try to tweak these people to represent the individuals that I was trying to portray. And then as I played the game, I had this narrative going in the back of my head about what's going on at base. When they were out in the field, I would try to play people true to the character. In fact, there was a couple times that Chad and Paul in particular would sit there and watch me play the game and listen to me narrate it. And when their characters were on the field, I would not move them for them. I would ask them, where do you want to go? What do you want to do? And they would tell me, and I'd move them to that point and have them take a cover and shoot some alien or whatever it is that they wanted to do. And then back at the base, I would narrate, okay, this is how we're reacting to so-and-so's death, and these are things we're struggling with. Fast forward nearly 20 years, and XCOM Enemy Unknown comes out in a brand new form. I picked it up through Steam. You get on multiple platforms. And I decided...
All hail, Gaben.
And I decided to do the same thing again. And at first, I just started kind of blogging it to myself on Facebook just because I was entertaining myself. But people started really latching on to it, submitting their own RP, asking me questions about it. So eventually I moved it to Fear the Boot's main blog and was kind of surprised in looking around the internet that it became something of a cult hit. There were people that don't even listen to the podcast, but were very interested in following what I was calling the XCOM saga. So it was really kind of neat. So I let several years go by. Enemy Within comes out. I grabbed Enemy Within. I grabbed the other DLCs that came out and wrote this second story. And as of right now, I am approaching almost parity of game content to RP submissions from the people who are represented in the game. I've almost reached parity. And at the current rate that I'm getting it, by the time the game is over, there will have been more RP write-ups sent to me than there will be actual game content. And the cool thing about these RP write-ups is people are narrating their life at base, the internal struggles they're having, they're even hopping on like IMs with each other, role playing out these moments where their characters interact. And then they email me the log and I translate that into an RP thing that I post on the website. And I don't take control of their characters. Obviously, when I play the game, they're not sitting there. So I have to move the people. The game rolls the dice, so to speak. Right. But as for how they act, what they do at base, what priorities we as a team set, who's protective of whom, who's taking risks and not, so on and so forth, it is very much based on the feedback of these people. All right. So with that history given, I want to ask a question before I retort. And I guess retort's a strong word because it's not precisely attack to me. But before I reply to your
observation. I didn't value judgment at all.
Right, right. No, and that's why I said that's the wrong word. But before I reply to your observation and amend it, or at least what feels to me like I'm amending it, Beth, as one of the most prolific contributors to the XCOM saga, why do you participate? Why do you enjoy it?
It's different than regular RP, because when you're doing a regular tabletop game, you're creating a character. Now, granted, since you're creating the character, it can be argued that a lot of yourself is in that character. It's me.
Yes.
I know me. I know what I'm going to do. So I have just that much more of an investment in it. And if anyone has been following along, in the first saga, Pat was killed. So then I started thinking along those lines. What would I do to keep my boys safe? What would I do? And so now I'm just got a lot of investment in it because it's not an outside character. It's me in that situation.
Interesting. So for all that we blabber about the distinction between character and player and drama and blah, 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 gaming is, of course, escapism and power fantasy, and it's perhaps a breath of fresh air for me to hear someone admit that they actually just straight up like playing themselves with a laser rifle.
Hell yeah!
Well, I think White Wolf players have known that for decades.
Well, that's
John.
True too. Yeah, that's true too.
Well, and I have posited, and I still fully believe, that it is a bad idea in games to fall into a character rut, which is why I urge people to move farther and farther from themselves to avoid a character rut. But no matter how far you move, that character is still some iteration of yourself. You know, even if I try to play someone who's 100% not me, I'm still playing that person based on my observations and understandings of that person.
And you're still imagining what it'd be like to be magic or have lasers or be a thief or something.
But ultimately, the subject of any sentence you use to describe this starts with I.
Right.
I am imagining, I am trying to project, I have looked into, they all start with you. And so you can never have a character that's 100% not you. A good role player might get 99% not them.
That's tough.
Yeah. So I certainly think there is a level of, it's very personal. Because
it's very personal.
In the story, you're having to make decisions that, in a sense, you put yourself into very directly. What would I do if faced with this? You know, in your case, while I don't include them in combats and things like that, because I don't want the story to go too dark, your two young children are in the story. They appear in the role-playing stuff all the time. And, you know, once again, I keep them out of the combats.
Because that's creepy. And
yeah. Because
who needs that?
I don't need to drag Best Day down by, oh, yeah, the aliens slaughter your two.
You can't even render that in XCOM.
No, you can't. Well, not in this version.
Well, it was going to get dicey with the base attack. It could have gotten real dark.
Well, if you lose the base attack, you just lose the game.
Well,
there was no way you couldn't say, okay, we won the base attack, and they didn't get into the family quarters. That was totally up to the RP.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, I mean, there was, when the base attack thing came out, I did think through, okay, if they make it into the family quarters and my kids are gone, that is going to really affect the way I play this character. Right now, since they're okay, my first priority is them and keeping myself as safe as I can to take care of them. They were gone. Load me up with every implant. Load me up with everything. Make me a flippin' mech. I don't care. I want to go take out everyone I can take out because I got nothing left to live for.
And that's one of the points of friction, which I'll get around to in the course of discussing the difference between an ARG and GMing. Among our characters, among our cast of people playing ourselves, some people are all about the transgenics, the cybernetic augs, the mechanical augs. Some people say, well, you're playing God, or you can't do this for whatever reason. Myself in character has said, load me with the psionic implants, the bioimplants, and put an exoskeleton on me if you want to, because I have to save people like Beth.
Interjection, acronym check here, ARG.
Alternate reality game.
Okay.
An ARG, in its classical sense, and I'm sure there's going to be tons of wanker over exactly what is and isn't an ARG, but an alternate reality game is typically a game that involves real-life elements. As an example of an ARG. There has been a few times where like a major book is coming out and they'll like put up a fake website for a company. And in there will be clues that might get you to hidden web pages. Nah. And then those hidden web pages direct you to like a park at a certain time of day,
right,
at, where a clue will be hidden under a bench. And, you know, then you find that. It's the idea that you have these games that bleed over on some level into the real world.
And this XCOM thing is perhaps not precisely an ARG classically imagined, but it's close enough.
Yeah, it works. It's hand grenade close, so it will use it.
So we could use it in Terror from the Deep.
Yes.
What's funny, though,
I'm not using anything from Terror from the Deep.
Talking about this with Pat, since he got killed pretty early on in the first saga, and so he didn't really get into the RP. So talking with him about this, and I had him read something where I had like a near-death experience or something. He's like, I can't read that. And I'm like, why? He's like, I can't think about you being in danger and the kids being in danger and me not being there. I cannot play a game where I'm putting my friends and I have to watch them be in danger. I can't do that. I'm like, okay. So the investment's a little too much for him.
Right. No, and for some people it might be. Yeah. But here's my reverse description of the situation. There's unquestionably aspects of the XCOM game that are different from a traditional role-playing game. But as I think about it, it strikes me that they have far more in common than they do different. Because in each game, you control a character through role-playing, through the contributions of your own decision-making. While you're not there to say, I move to this square and shoot this alien, I do try to stay faithful to the individual based on what I know of their personality, their priorities, their strengths and weaknesses, what might be going on in the back of their mind. Certainly the RP scenes, which I am using to set the overall base level control, what we spend our money on, what technologies we're pursuing, what technologies we're using versus not using because we find them objectionable, is all based on the RP. Which people put in a squad together and won't put in a squad together because they either care too much about each other or hate each other too much is based on the RP. There is this entire wrapping around the story that is done based on the RP. In fact, there is this entire plot line, and I reinterpret the plot of the video game. Now, not being a sandbox video game, you could liken XCOM to a module. It has a start, a middle, and an end, which I cannot change. This is not an open world sandbox game.
And you like that in GMing. You like plotted games, and everyone else in the tabletop groups hate them, which is a reason you like this more.
Fair point, sort of. I think people have presupposed, largely based more on my descriptions than games I've actually run, that that is the case. Because the games that I have actually run with this group, you guys have gone in very, very different directions than what I had originally thought the game was going to go.
Right. To your large dissatisfaction.
No. My largest satisfaction was in one thing and one thing only. I was not allowed to set the starting point of the game. Let me give you an example from Battletech. When I came to the group and said, let me run a game based on a group I've already designed, the answer was no. Why? Well, the overriding fear that was communicated to me seemed to be, well, we're afraid we're just going to be acting out a script. And no matter how much I said that's not the case, I could not sufficiently convince anyone that if they had not created the group, they would therefore not also be able to have any freedom, or significant freedom, I guess I should say, or sufficient freedom, in where the game went from there. And yet here in XCOM, you have a game where the combat itself is out of my control. I mean, I can move people around, but I don't roll the dice. I don't control the aliens. In many ways, the computer is more of a GM than I am. But if you look at the plot line that's going on, people are having this huge investment. There's a radical emergent story that is intertwined with, but also distinct from, the main narrative over which I have no control because I'm allowing this to unfold completely through the character RP. People are very deeply invested in it. It's going in all kinds of unique directions, and yet it fits very much the mold of the kind of game that I would want to run, not in that it has a fixed course, but that it had a specific starting point because it starts off with, whatever happens from here, you are yourselves. We are a group of friends and family in this situation, which obviously there's no really good explanations for. But for some reason, we're the world's elite
Instead
killing
of
aliens.
Delta Force, it's random they called lawyers us. And programmers. Yeah.
But the point being, you know, if you...
Hey, you know, if aliens invade, first thing I'm doing is rounding up the podcasters. All right?
Hey,
so who else are you going to call?
Here's the point. nerds have spent a whole lot of time thinking this through.
That's exactly right.
You know where I'm going? I'm getting on Highway 55 and I'm heading to Arkansas with my hick relatives because we'll win and we'll live.
If aliens or zombies can flood into the backyard, I've already thought this through. As probably have most of the people listening to this podcast, your average suit in the government, they have no idea what to do. No.
I'm on the third floor of a building that is on the highest hill in my city.
Walmart Distribution Center.
What's that?
Walmart Distribution Center.
That's a good one.
That's where I'm headed.
But I'm not going anywhere. I'm pointing down.
But the point being that
I've got big windows and a gun.
With that setup of, okay, let's just presuppose that the real us gets pulled into this situation. There are aliens invading and we don't know why. And indeed, in the first saga, I didn't totally know why. And even this time, with the addition of all the DLCs and expansions, there are parts of the story that are genuinely foreign to me. When I see them, I'm seeing them for the first time. And yet the player investment is on course within probably about 1 week to outstrip the amount of game content that has been given to me by Firaxis or whoever the hell it is that makes this game. And my point here is the more I thought about it, the more that I started to realize if I was to be able to run the kinds of games I want to run, I would be asking for even less control. And I think that this situation proves that my model works, that the buy-in, the level of control, the level of character development can be amazing with more control than I'm actually asking for. And yet I cannot get the group to go along with the level of control I've asked for.
Well, go ahead, Beth.
Oh, I'm sorry, but here's kind of, I think, the tripping point, at least with like the BattleTech game. We're going to base it on this group that we've already kind of talked about. I think in the XCOM, I keep going back to this because it really rings true for me. We don't have to create characters. We're me. It's me. It's John. It's Johan.
That's a good point.
We don't have to. Whereas if I'm fitting into a template, I may not find a place in that template that fits me. So I think that's maybe the reluctance. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just,
I think that's one thread of the weave. I think that's a little,
and partially you get a bunch of stubborn people sitting at a table and like, let's do this. No. Right. Yeah. Again, not right or wrong.
Qualifying half objection, half question. You are not presenting the role play material that you're getting without filter and preference, correct?
That is incorrect.
That is incorrect.
That is incorrect.
Where is my email?
The one that you sent to Dr. Shen and Dr. Valen?
No, to you. You were the two. They were the subject line. Is that why it hasn't shown up?
To explain what John's talking about, this is where I skimmed your email and think I saw what it was about. And maybe
I can tell you what it was about.
Okay.
Dan put out a call. Okay, set up. My point will be simmering beneath this. Dan, you have played yourself, someone with very strong views about the sanctity of the human body and the human soul.
Yes.
Not wanting to go balls deep into the transgenics, into the cybernetics, into the psionics.
Correct.
You want to win without compromising what you believe is the sacrosanct nature of humanity.
Yes.
You have people in your group playing themselves with no such reservations.
Correct.
Myself included.
Yes.
Apparently, they have been voicing that dissent, and as far as I can tell, you have not yet been publishing it.
Okay.
Is this because it's going against the roleplay direction that you imagined, or
no,
your own character?
Neither is the case. The only reason that email has not appeared is because Tex was the only person prior to one point in the role play. And if anyone's interested, you go to the site and read the role play. It's a great way to waste time at work. But if you go and read the role play, there comes a point where really Tex is the only one who spends a lot of his role play interacting with me as a character. Most of the character interaction really occurs at the soldier level. I kind of sit above and out apart from it, which I think is partially by my choice, partially by the choice of the people in the role playing. That's really neither here nor there. But the point being that Tex was really the only person that kind of challenged me on that in the role play and said, are you sure this is a good idea? You know, we can really do this. And he started making some points that I had to admit, even given my very absolutist moral views, he was starting to make some points that I could not rationally argue with. And so there comes this point in the role play where my character kind of puts it on the line and says, okay, I cannot make this decision for you people. I'm not your daddy. I'm not your god. You have to decide for yourselves what it is you're willing to give up to win this war. You know, I can't sit here and tell you I'm not going to give you the technologies available
to us. And I will give up not having psychic powers.
Right. Precisely. Precisely. But what happened then was
the sacrifices we make.
A pretty good number of people shot me back in-character responses. If I was to have published them all, it would have been literally, I mean, screens upon screens upon screens upon screens.
Which it is already anyway.
Well, no, but of one thing only, which is everyone saying, I want to be transhuman and here's why. What I have done is I have set all of that aside. And in the game, for anyone who has not played this game, there's a resource called Meld that's necessary to create some of these transhuman changes. And what I have done, because in the game, our group just playing doesn't have enough Meld, is I've set them aside. And as the requests are granted, so once I get enough Meld to make somebody something else, I will then publish that bit of RP as a flashback to, okay, I've got a stack of emails and notes. I put them in a freaking bingo ball, draw one out. This is the one I'm granting.
Eaten.
Okay.
And so the answer to your question is no, I am not filtering the RP. What people send me, even when I disagree with it, I publish it. The only thing I edit for is grammar, verb, tense, well, things like
it,
that.
What it appears to be, before we had this conversation, as one of the apparent many who have taken character tags directly opposite yours, is that they just don't get published.
No, that is not the case at all. I have been very open. The only things that I have not published have been things that have either been so short or so out of date that I
really... And I got no problem with that.
Right, and I can't fit them into the narrative.
But, just... but the parallel I saw, and this is not accusatory, this is how you GM,
right,
is that the same frustration that I see take into your mind when you run TTRPGs, and it goes on and goes on, and it doesn't go the direction that you wanted it to... perhaps was taking root in your mind.
That is,
you say now it's not, and I believe you.
Yeah.
But we hadn't talked about it.
Right. And anyone who's playing the game would be able to tell you that any role play they have sent in, almost without fail, has been published. And those that have not been published, once again, it's only been because of the fact that they just, it's not per se they disagreed with me. It's just, it was too short. It was too vague. They were referring to a point that happened six chapters back. It was just something I couldn't work in. The reason you don't see more dissent is because until Tech started role-playing with me, most of the role-play was at the squad level, not at the command level. Nobody was like saying, oh, okay, I'm going to pull Dan aside and try to talk him out.
I didn't think that.
And when I did finally reach that point where I said, okay, it's no longer my right to play anybody's daddy or god. And I did post on both Facebook and Google Plus. I said, hey, as an FYI to all you people that are sending me these letters, I can't publish them all for space safe, for economy reasons. But as the requests get granted, I will then go back, grab your email, publish it, and say, Dan pulls out a note that reads as follows. He's sent to the lab.
If I were doing it, I would take a couple interpretations that you have not. I would find the requests to be interesting RP in themselves. I only know what I wrote, but I suspect that other people wrote in coming to the same conclusion that I did for different reasons. I think it would be interesting to see. Two, I think the RP will be interesting among the staff and both from your half narrative, half in character perspective. Dan, specifically, as we have this sort of half wolves, half sheep movement going on where both sides think they're the sheep.
Yes.
I think that would be far more narratively exciting and create more roleplay opportunities than just sort of not doing anything with it until you have the meld to grant requests. But
yeah, well, and that's a fair, that is a fair critique. And perhaps I could cycle out some of these letters. My hope is, at any rate, I have moved meld up to be a higher priority. It used to be on meld missions, I didn't even really bother. But now I have moved them up to
being... Unless they've changed it, however, the psionics don't require meld at all, that or is do they now?
The psionics do not require meld. Right, right. But,
and we have a chamber.
Yes, but the crazy thing is, to the best of my recollection, and I'll admit, John, yours was the one I didn't read in detail, nobody else has requested psionics. Everybody else has requested either genetics or cybernetics.
No. And that's another dimension of roleplay. You open the field for which of the three do you want... I don't know what other people said, but I said anything. I said leave it to Valen and Shen's discretion. I want to be the most effective support I can. So I don't care what you have to grant.
Yeah, if somebody said, look, I want to go into the psi chamber, I could grant that pretty quickly. Yeah. But other requests...
And I did, in part.
Yeah, other requests that I read, nobody wanted the psi chamber. Everybody wanted either their genome changed or they wanted to be a cyborg. And that requires the meld, which we just plain don't have. Right. And so what I was going to do is... But no, those things...
Right. But we roleplay scarcity all the time. You roleplay the scarcity of our interceptor craft in every single post.
Oh, yeah.
So that's part of it.
And that is one thing that I, like I said, I understand why it has occurred, but I think would have changed the dynamic of the game is if more roleplay had been directed at the command staff, had been directed specifically at me and Tex.
Well, for me, I didn't really do that because I'm thinking sort of chain of command wise. I'm just this lowly medic. And even though we were friends, you know, in a different life, I didn't really feel like I could just plop myself into your office and be like, "Hey, Dan, what up?" It just felt weird. So I just never did.
What are the roleplay lessons from this? Because we're dangerously going into just telling a gaming story that's not even about a game.
A really huge gaming story.
Let me tie this back to role-playing games here in a couple ways. The first thing that I think this has given an exercise is, look, what are role-playing games at their root? It's a shared storytelling experience with some kind of a mechanic. You play a role with a game, okay? It's a two parts of a role-playing game. And we have that here in XCOM. It's a different approach to it, but we have people playing a role, which in this case is their best interpretation of how they would respond to very bizarre circumstances, with the backdrop of a game, which is this game engine put out once again by Firaxis, whoever the hell it is that makes this game. Within this context of a role-playing game, the first thing that I noticed was that something that propositionally I had been asking my role-playing groups to do for a very long time and not really been given the opportunity to do, I think has proven itself to be beyond workable. I mean, people are incredibly invested in this, despite the fact that there is a limitation to even what I, as the game master, quote unquote, can control about the narrative.
Despite or because? Do we trust you more because you're beholden to a random number generator and a predefined plot?
No, not necessarily.
And we're not just playing Dan the Danning. I might.
But
look at you.
I don't know.
But here's the thing, though. Once again, I don't edit or intercept or filter the role-playing.
And I'm not accusing you of doing
right.
that.
But the other thing that I would say...
Anymore.
Is
there was, I did about 10 minutes.
There was a bonus episode that we talked about doing, and we may still do this at some point, called I Wish. And the idea of the I Wish game is that basically, you know, each of us says, look, we really wish that our fellow players, our game masters, whatever, would do something.
And you wish people would shut up and play the games you want to run.
I wish people... Here's the thing.
And that's why I'm saying you like this so much.
Yes.
There's nothing wrong with it. It just is.
I wish people would trust me, I think is a better way of putting it. And I think this is something that has really bugged me in almost every group I have been in, going all the way back to the 1980s, is I have established myself in all of these groups as a game master who's capable of telling a good story. But the moment I say, just trust me, look, you don't have to play it forever, but just give me two serious attempts at this, two games, and trust me and try it. And I cannot get my groups to even do that.
Because you go over the border of what they think is their exclusive purvey as PCs. And even though they like you as a GM and trust you as a person, they retch at the thought.
And I think that kind of, in a way, is my point. Is, you know, look, within role-playing games, one of the neat things that's been going on over the past several years in the role-playing industry is these pushes to take role-playing in very different directions. Collaborative storytelling, GM-less games, you know, all this wild sort of experimentation.
Hippies.
And look, based on your personal taste, I think we can say some of it we like, some of it we don't like. This is going to vary from person to person. We might even be
able
to go...
But it sucks because we don't like it.
Because they're hippies.
We might even be able to go so far as say some of this stuff just plain as close to objectively as you can get doesn't work. But I think that's kind of one of the things I say is, look, if we're willing to experiment with Chad's improv GMing and using a Jenga tower, which relies on personal skill instead of dice and so on and so forth.
Then just so we know, I'm not willing to experiment with Jenga. My line is way before we get to Jenga.
Yeah, I actually would be really mad if the primary dispute resolution system of a actual campaign, not a one shot,
right,
was a Jenga tower.
But you know,
I'm with you, bro.
Well, even within Fate, where you end up with a system that really, yes, there are dice involved, but the fundamental mechanic of the game is adjectives or nouns, maybe depending on how you write. But it's your aspects, and you know, you tag those aspects, and that heavily influences the game math. Yes, there are still dice, but that so heavily influences the game math that at times the dice almost don't matter. I think within that kind of environment, it's very frustrating to someone like me to say, look, I've been GMing for over 20 years. Yes, I've run some lemons, but I've also run some campaigns that people have very much enjoyed. Good God, can't you trust me enough for three settings, a character creation session and two games? And if you hit the end of the second game sitting, fine, we'll axe it. I won't bitch. We'll just move on. But the fact that I have not had a single group yet, except maybe one, where I could say, just trust me. And if it fails, fine, I'll accept that. We'll never come back to it. But it really frustrates me that as a game master, I don't seem capable of proving myself to a point that the players will give me the freedom not to run them on the rails I want, but just to start them at a point of my selection.
I think you're thinking of it through the wrong light. You are interpreting a value judgment on you, or at least your GMing ability, by this intransigence, and I don't think it's there. But I think Gary Gygax could roll out of his grave and sit down at the plate and tell Chad that he's playing a elf barbarian at this point, and you're starting in Mirkwood tree number 72, and the table would say, go back to hell, dead Gary Gygax. I want to design my own character with my own plot.
Because the takeaway I'm getting from this is to get investment, you need to make that character like you.
Right.
I don't want to make some character that's completely 90% different than me, because I'm going to waste all this time trying to figure out how to play that. Screw that. I'm going to play what I know.
You should play that, Beth. I think you should play Calpurnia the housemaid. She's very weak and submissive. Art hates kids.
But the thing I would say is, Beth, the character you played in the BattleTech game we did run would have worked perfectly fine in the one that I was trying to set up.
That's true.
You know, I think your problem, Dan, is you've got the wrong group of players. Because,
hey!
Sorry, but I will tell you from my experience, what you are describing would never have happened at any table I have sat at for a campaign. Because amongst the groups of people that I have traditionally gamed with, GMs are in such unbelievable demand that the argument goes, who's going to DM? Not me, not me, not me.
Oh my God,
me.
We got one.
Somebody has to do it. You DM. Yeah. Fine. This is what I'm running. Right. And everyone goes, yes. We've observed
that
before.
We are bizarre in that we have a group of friends who are gamers, 75% plus of which GM at least sometimes, and a sizable fraction of that prefer and perhaps even insist on GM.
Right, right. And that's your problem, is that you are in the envied spot, so everyone is trying to steal the hot seat.
I'm a disposable resource. Right. I mean, to put it bluntly, I'm a disposable resource.
As are we all.
Yeah. But I think, John, I don't think it is entirely wrong to create that level of transference to a value judgment, because if I say to you, I'm going to run game A, and I'm told, no, it's going to suck, it's going to suck, it's going to suck, no matter how much I try to say, look, just trust me, I've been doing this long, if I know it's not going to suck, or at least it's not going to suck as bad as you think, versus if I run game B, well, now we'll do it. And your point about Gary Gygax coming out and giving this dictatorial statement to Chad, I think, while I get the point you're getting at, I think perhaps in the facetiousness of the allegory, it loses some of its applicability, because that goes way above and beyond anything that I was asking for. You know, it wasn't anything about, well, you must very specifically be
there. Right, right, right. And of course it was.
And there's no room for give, you know. But the other point I wanted to make, without beating this one to death, there's another point about the XCOM saga that has made me rethink a long-held value that I've had within role-playing. Because in the past, and by past I mean going pretty far back, several gaming groups back, we made a few attempts at games where we role-played ourselves, where it's like, what if we projected ourselves into another circumstance? And we typically found that...
You were playing White Wolf.
Well, no, it wasn't White Wolf, but it more came down to...
I mean, maybe it wasn't the White Wolf. It sucks, but it was White Wolf.
It starts off with bickering.
It was Gray Wolf.
It starts off with bickering about stats, because, of course, everyone...
You know, I have 18...
Yeah, exactly. You know, no one can agree.
Go outside and move that boulder, and if you can, then you have an 18 strength.
No one can agree on what stats they've got.
Deadlifts, go! That'd be awesome.
We've done that.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
No, stat at your strength out at the gym,
dude.
Yep.
Look around online. Look around online. People have set up whole tests for this.
I mean, you could. You can calculate how many standard deviations an 18 strength was versus how much that person can squat.
Precisely.
And I was like, Johan has done it.
We use bench press,
and you could and you could do similar things for dexterity tests, for intelligence tests, for wisdom tests.
We used IQ tests for intelligence.
And oh my god!
And you can arrive at fairly objective numbers.
Oh, I don't remember anymore. But this, like I said, this was high school, so
but here's,
a long time ago.
What did you do, charisma? Hey, go talk to a girl. No.
Okay, three. Seven. Yeah.
Well, charisma, I think it's a little bit different. Well, it depends on the game you're talking about. For example, in like later editions of D&D, charisma also became strength of personality, strength of presence. It almost became in some ways interchangeable with willpower.
And in answer to your question, and I fairly non-facetious manner, if I remember correctly, diplomatic style skills were usually assigned by not you. So everybody else at the table would tell you what your
But
here's the point. Even moving beyond stats, we kind of had...
As insultingly as possible.
We kind of had this understanding that, well, role-playing yourself just doesn't work because you can't be objective about who you are, even past the stats. And it was just a bad idea. Let's not do it. But one of the things I think the XCOM saga has really made me rethink is the plausibility of running a good game where you play yourself. And this is something that prior to the XCOM saga, you could not have sold to me for $1 billion. And yet now, after watching the XCOM saga, if someone came to me and said, Dan, I want you to run a campaign where we're playing ourselves. Now, I might have some parameters on it in order to make it work for me, but I totally believe that it could be done. I have come to believe from watching this saga that if you have people who are not completely insecure tight asses, you can have people play themselves very plausibly. And Beth, I disagree with you because even in your RP submissions, you've made yourself very vulnerable. You know, yes, you certainly do have strength, but so does the real Beth. But the way you've written your character also has vulnerabilities and weaknesses and difficulties and struggles and moment of uncertainty.
Yeah. And you're explicitly motivated by fear for your children. How many RPG characters are motivated by fear?
Precisely. Yeah, exactly. Unless fear is fear of the big bad, you know.
Fear of not getting enough XP fast enough to be the same level as the rest of the group.
Precisely.
Fear of not getting enough loot.
That's why you craft a scroll so you can go down to like just that lower level, and then you get more of a proportional of the XP of that encounter, and then you leapfrog ahead.
Whoa.
This Wizards, has been man. Strategic Gaming with John. Tune in next week.
XP proper feat selection are not penalties.
Oh, feat
if
chains.
You do them right, they're a bonus.
So let me ask you guys a theoretical question. I'm not proposing this because right now, between the throat thing and a side project I'm working on, my dance
would you play Johann the Johanning?
Yes.
Yes, no. I would.
Well, yeah.
Here's my question. Let's say tomorrow we were all getting together to game, and I walked in with generic game system X, whatever that might be, and said, I have come up with my own XCOM plotline, completely separate from the video games. You know, I've got my own what they're really after, what kind of life forms there are, whatever. I want you guys all to play yourselves, but I'm going to set the starting point. If you're all playing yourselves, you're in a base that's located in such and such. Here's your backers. Where it goes from here, I won't control. But I want you guys to play yourselves in a scenario that I'm going to describe. Would you do it?
Sure.
Sure.
And I would have played Super Scorpions. With an RPG
and
to run
I
it.
Started playing the fantasy game at that before you got a throat thing.
Right. Well, and the whole Battletech thing, I would have done online if not for the fact that Megamech, I was afraid, was going to become too much of a hurdle.
Right.
I think that Battletech has to be run face-to-face. Megamech is good, but it's not quite where it needs to be in terms of usability and such.
I'm sorry, Johan, I cut you off. What the hell did you say?
Oh, I believe Tomb I said that if Dan shows up at my house with an RPG wanting to run it, I don't care what it is. Sure, come on in. Here's dice. Let's play.
You are drawing from that pool of California, Missouri GMs,
yes.
Which is so deep. You have all the options.
It's about as deep as a waiting pool.
It's about
me
as deep
and
as
the other people in my house.
I just want to figure out what my stats are. I'm like thinking about like
this is a party game that someone trots out about every 5 years, and it always ends in tears and punching.
Yeah,
you really don't want to hear it.
Yeah, you don't want to go there.
It always ends very. The last time...
We're not drunk enough.
The one and only
there
time...
There is no drunk enough.
Yeah, the one and only time that I got caught up in it, I was told, and I quote...
Oh, God.
I don't think you're a very wise person because you seek advice from other people.
What?
Nice!
Well, that didn't
I think
make
I
any
remember,
sense.
Well, no,
whoever
party.
That was.
Isn't yes? Isn't,
I think I remember that.
You probably know who said it too. And like, isn't that the reverse of wisdom? Isn't wisdom the willingness to go?
I don't know, but I just figured it out. Yeah. I mean, there's only one.
Yeah, exactly.
That's hilarious.
So, anyway,
have you guys taken the next step of immaturity in this game and had the gladiatorial matches between your,
no.
Your characters?
Oh, God, no.
We need to. We need to do this now.
Jeez, Johan. What frontier of awfulness can I propose that I cannot find that you've already crossed and colonized?
It strikes
we'll
me.
Have to pull
on to the
Wayne
next
in
one.
To get there.
We
got to
do this. This needs to happen.
It strikes me that probably the best system for representing yourself
This is Pathfinder.
Well, no, it's not. No, that's the worst.
Second edition, actually.
I do not want to
bend a bar.
I do not want to figure out what my feet chain is. I was actually going
to suggest that, in my opinion, there are two ways to do this. One is either, okay, everybody makes in concert the character for Person X but that person. So if the four of us are playing and it comes time to make my character, I leave the room and the three of you make my character.
Boo.
Oh.
The other option I was going to say that I think would work very well, whether it was done by other people or by yourself, but I think would be abstract enough to really be kind of inarguably fair, would be Fate / Fudge. Because if you basically...
Adjectives instead of...
Precisely. Attributes. Because, for example, I think most people could agree Dan is intelligent. Now, how intelligent I am, particularly compared to John or Beth or Johan or Chad or whatever...
Frickin' Einstein.
Now it gets into trouser dropping. But I think, you know, once again, I could put down, you know, that technically savvy. And most people say, yeah.
You could find non-controversial adjectives.
Precisely.
Well, what fun is
although inevitably at some table, someone is going to be like...
You people are ruining the game. All right?
And you're going to be like...
No, you're not.
And then what do you do? What do you do?
Yeah. No, you tell them you're not.
So,
No, you don't.
Have we met?
That ends in tears.
Character creation would be a beast. But I do believe, after having watched the XCOM thing unfold, that if you can get past character creation, which is easy in the XCOM thing, because in the current XCOM games... You don't create the characters. If I go and do a third XCOM saga, which I probably will using the old Apocalypse game,
yeah.
Characters will have stats, and I probably won't tell anyone what their stats are.
You publish them.
Yeah, I will never publish
what
those
do you
stats.
Mean I'm less dexterous than Dan Kritsky?
Yeah.
Get the hell out, Dan.
Oh, my God.
Exactly. And so I won't probably ever publish the stats, but I think if you get past character creation, I have now become sold on the idea that people can play themselves and do so well.
And fight each other.
And fight each other.
Johan, will you please run a slot of this?
We have got to do this. I see something sort of like American Gladiators. That'll be the greatest.
How
this needs
can
to
we get
happen.
Johan, you could even take
bench
the host.
Press rack.
Take the host, even if we're not playing, and just make a character sheet for Dan, John, Chad, whatever. And let people.
In fact, we can't play and we can't see the sheets. That's no. A liberty for you to generate them.
Absolutely. And then we could all take bets on who would win, who's in the final two.
Nice.
Oh, this
we get,
make
we
this
get to
happen.
Give you a briefing on any actual weapon competences we have in real life. That's the only thing we get to tell you. Other than that, you generate all the stats and all the skills because those will be the only relevant things.
Seems reasonable.
All right.
Let's do it.
I will take the matter under advisement.
All right. That's what I tell people.
So, as always, check the show notes. Once again, we've got those, well, one charity and then one question about a charity that we'd love to have you guys take a look at. Have a great week and great games. And also, as you go through this holiday season, have a wonderful and happy holiday season. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, whatever it is you celebrate. Have a great time doing
it.
Celebrate it. Throw some dice. Have a great time. And we will catch you guys on the next show.
See you later.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2013. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.